You know this voice.
I am Dracula.
But maybe not this one.
Soy Dracula.
From NPR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. And today, the story of a scarier, sexier Dracula. Nowadays, we're used to movies and TV shows being dubbed into other languages. You can watch something in Spanish, French, Arabic, and it's dubbed, and so we kind of expect it. But that's not how it used to be in the movies. Back in the 1920s, there was no sound in film. All of the movies were silent. So studios didn't have to worry about what language was spoken when they were filming, because they didn't even have to think about dubbing anything. Everyone was silent. But then...
$10? Oh, I'm going to take you to Coney Island.
In 1927, talking pictures, or talkies, hit Hollywood. The first feature-length talkie was the jazz singer.
Now get this. Blue sky, smiling at me, 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 me. Nothing but little blue sky.
And they became the norm. And at the same time, studio executives started to panic because moviegoers now would expect to hear actors' voices. And if the movies were just in English, the studios were now set to lose about half of the revenues that they earned when their silent movies played in other countries. So they came up with a plan.
And it's something that today would sound just totally crazy.
That's Vanessa Erazo. She's the head film nerd at Remezcla, a website about Latin culture, music, and movies. And Vanessa's going to take this story from here.
It's a story that I've been looking into with my colleague from Remezcla, Yara Simón. And she's here today to help me tell you about it.
So it's September 29, 1930, and the classic black and white Dracula movie just began filming at Universal Studios in California.
The movie starred Bela Lugosi as Dracula, and it was actually the first ever horror talkie film.
This is Dracula, the original terrifying story of a maniac and a man who lived after death, lived on human blood, took the form of a vampire bat, and lured innocent girls to a fate truly worse than death.
Well, you already know the basic plot of Dracula. There's this creepy aristocrat who's living in a castle in a far-off land known as Transylvania, and he has a taste for drinking blood.
But Bela Lugosi wasn't the only Dracula giving people nightmares. At night, after Lugosi and the rest of the cast and crew went to bed, an entirely different group of actors would show up and film another version of Dracula. And this one was in Spanish.
Soy Dracula. No podía usted ser más oportuno.
They decided to make the Spanish version at the same time that they made the English.
That was the star of the Spanish language Dracula, Lupita Tovar. She's speaking in an interview included in the film's DVD release.
So the cast for the English version would come in the morning, started shooting at 8 o'clock, and the Spanish cast will come in the evening. We shot all night long till next morning because we use exactly the same set.
Not only did they use the same sets, but they used the same props and a lot of the same costumes. The cast, however, that was different. It was made up of actors from across Latin America and Spain.
The actor Carlos Villarías, who played Dracula, wore the same hairpiece that Lugosi wore. It didn't get much of a rest. Lugosi would take it off, and then Carlos would wear it all night and would be there for Lugosi to put on in the morning.
That was film historian David Skoll. He's the author of a book called Gothic Hollywood, which is basically like a Dracula encyclopedia. David had heard about this mysterious version of Dracula in Spanish, so when he sat down to write his book, he knew he had to find out more.
I'd spent three amazing days with the only complete print of the Spanish Dracula in existence.
David realized right away that the Spanish Dracula was much better than the English one.
The first time I saw the film, I was kind of amazed. It was akin to one of those dreams where you're discovering brand new rooms in an old familiar house, things you never knew were there before. The film was so fascinating because it was recognizably the same story, but it was told in a technically superior way.
Caballeros, tenemos que habernoslas con los vampiros.
The lighting was better, the camera work was better, more fluid, it seemed. The editing was better.
For example, there's a scene early on in the movie where a character named Mr. Renfield goes to visit Count Dracula for a business meeting.
The one in which Dracula makes his first appearance at the top of the staircase in Castle Dracula. In the American film, Lugosi simply appears, walks down the steps, takes his mark, and introduces himself.
Here, the camera doesn't move at all. It just stays perfectly still and keeps cutting back and forth between Dracula and Mr. Renfield.
But in the Spanish film, we see Mr. Renfield, the visitor, turn around, and he's startled by the sudden appearance of Dracula, who's appeared out of nowhere. And suddenly the camera is set on a moving crane, just sweeps up the staircase to focus in on the vampire holding his candle. And that's how he is introduced. And then he says, "Soy Dracula." And it's just a much more cinematic moment.
Con todas esas cosas, creí que me había equivocado de casa. Los muros de mi castillo están cuarteados. Abundan en él las sombras.
The Spanish version of Dracula was also just way more fun to watch. And that's mostly because the actors working the graveyard shift for the Spanish film were just so much more animated, especially the leading lady, Lupita Tovar.
I mean, Lupita was a very vivacious personality.
Estaba leyendo y me quedé dormida.
Lupita has those old Hollywood-style finger waves in her hair, and she's wearing this white flowing nightgown. She's sitting on a fancy flower print couch, and she tells her fiancé about a terrible dream she just had.
Era tan espesa que apenas podía divisar la luz que estaba junto a la cama. Parecía una chispa diminuta perdida en la niebla.
Lupita didn't have a lot of experience as an actor, but as she continues to describe the nightmare she had, we really get a sense of how expressive she could be.
Y una cara pálida y amoratada entre la niebla. Se acercó más y más. Sentí su aliento en mi cara y sus labios. ¡Ay!
Helen Chandler, by contrast, was almost lifeless.
I lay in bed for quite a while, reading. And just as I was commencing to get drowsy, I heard dogs howling.
That's Helen Chandler. She's the actress in the English version of Dracula. She played the same role as Lupita.
It was so thick, I could just see the lamp by the bed.
She seems already drained by Dracula before he even attacks her.
Here's Lupita talking about what made her character so different.
We Latins have a different way of expressing ourselves, you know. We're very emotional. And I think the American people were kind of subdued. I was very lively because that's the way I was. And nobody said, "Now look, Tony, down," or anything.
Lupita and the other actors in Spanish Dracula were given much more freedom to express themselves. But it wasn't by accident. See, the English version faced a pretty big obstacle, something called the Hays Code.
The Hays Code was a set of rules that Hollywood had adopted in 1930, which is the very same year that Dracula began filming. And it dictated what could and what couldn't be shown in movies. A lot of the rules were about policing sexuality. For example, there would be no, quote, excessive and lustful kissing, no lustful embraces, or no suggestive postures. Other rules were more bizarre, like, and this is a direct quote, "White slavery shall not be treated."
Since the English version of Dracula was shot to conform with the code, it made for a much tamer film.
The big difference you see is in how the female characters were dressed. Lupita Tovar's negligee was far more revealing. In fact, it was see-through in a way that Helen Chandler never could have gotten away with wearing.
Don't, please!
So Dracula is a vampire movie, but in the English version, you never actually see him bite anyone. In one scene, Count Dracula creeps up on an unsuspecting victim while she's sleeping, and slowly his face gets closer and closer to her neck, and right when he's just close enough to sink his teeth into her, it just fades into the next scene. We know he bites her, but don't ever see it happen. But in the Spanish language movie, it's way more suggestive. Dracula slowly crawls into her bed, and right as he bites her neck, he dramatically pulls his long black cape over both of their faces.
And the Spanish film had another advantage. The director could watch the footage shot during the day by the English crew.
The daily rushes were there. They could observe what Todd Browning was doing with the American cast and crew, and then they could improve on it or just duplicate it. The production moved more quickly because the roadmap was all there.
And that's one theory on why the Spanish version ended up being a better movie.
The supervising producer on both of these films was a man named Paul Koner. And he split his time between the English and the Spanish shoots. He was working day and night, grabbing a nap when he could on the couch in his office. He really just lived and breathed Dracula. But behind the scenes, he was actually crafting his own love story.
Coming up on Latino USA.
It was love at first sight.
Behind the scenes of Dracula lurks a real love story. Stay with us, no te vayas.
Planet Money tip number 17. Sometimes life is exactly like the movies.
T-minus 30 seconds.
They said T-minus. They said T-minus.
Planet Money, a podcast about the economy and sometimes about rocket ships.
We're back. And now we're going to take a look behind the scenes of Spanish Dracula. Because with all of those late nights at work, well, it actually set off a little romance. Vanessa Erazo and Yara Simón of Remezcla pick up the story here.
Oh, it's a great love story, Paul Koner and Lupita Tovar.
That's Pancho Koner. He's the son of Lupita Tovar, the star of Dracula, and Paul Koner, the movie's producer. Paul was working his way up the Hollywood ladder. Meanwhile, in Mexico City, Lupita Tovar is a 17-year-old who was discovered by Fox Film Studios. So she packed up her things, leaves high school and her family so she can move to Los Angeles.
Lupita ended up booking a few small roles in some silent films, but then the first talkies came and everything changed for her. Because Lupita didn't really speak much English.
Fox didn't renew her contract, but they did suggest that she try her luck over at Universal, where they were dubbing talkies into Spanish. And that's where she met this young Czechoslovakian producer, Paul Koner.
It was love at first sight. He saw her. He hired her for 3 nights dubbing of a picture into Spanish.
But of course, that's Paul's version of the story. In her memoir, Lupita remembers things a little bit differently. She says that there was a strange guy who kept walking into the waiting room at Universal Pictures over and over again and would creepily stare at her. That creepy dude turned out to be Paul Koner, her future husband.
When those 3 days of dubbing work were over at Universal, Lupita thought she'd have to return to Mexico.
She went back to Universal to, as she told me, to say goodbye to that nice man. I think knowing fully well that he was smitten with her. And when she said she was going back, he said, wait a minute, give me 24 hours.
Paul was so head over heels for Lupita that he was determined to keep her in the U.S. no matter what. So he stormed into Carl Lemley's office with a plan. It was something that the other movie studios had already been experimenting with.
We should bring in another crew, Spanish-speaking actors, use the same everything, sets in the works, and for peanuts, we'll be able to make the film in Spanish. Lemley said, that's a brilliant idea, and my father quickly said, there's an actress here we should sign to a year's contract.
Paul's sales pitch convinced the head of Universal that it was a quick way to make more money. But really, it was just an elaborate ruse to hang out with his crush, Lupita Tovar. And it worked.
Not only did Lupita fall in love with him, but just 2 years after filming Dracula, they got married. And the rest is history.
They were married their whole lives. My mother just passed away at 106. My father passed away about 28 years ago. He was 85.
Together, Paul and Lupita Koner had two children who also worked in the movie business. Pancho, whose voice you've been hearing, is a producer. His older sister, Susan, is an Oscar-nominated actress. And her sons co-directed a few films you might have heard of. Movies like American Pie and About a Boy. And one of them is a co-writer of the Star Wars film Rogue One.
The Spanish version of Dracula ended up bringing Lupita and Paul closer together. And it also turned Lupita into one of Mexico's biggest movie stars.
Around this time, the Mexican press started calling her La Novia de México, or Mexico's sweetheart. Here's her grandson, Chris Weitz, one of the writers on Rogue One.
She had a real quality of innocence and charm, not a kind of a femme fatale, nothing really film noir about her.
After Dracula, Paul Koner became well-known in his own right, but more so behind the scenes. He was a big talent agent who managed the careers of super famous actors like Greta Garbo and Henry Fonda. So Paul and Lupita's home became sort of a meeting place for some of Hollywood's biggest stars.
Grandma had stories about all kinds of extraordinary Hollywood figures who are just kind of hanging around the house. There's Preston Sturges or, you know, Marlena Dietrich. She'd say, oh, Marlena, she's so self-absorbed.
Lupita even became friends with Mexican super couple Frida Kahlo and Diego Rivera, who actually painted a portrait of her. They lived a pretty charmed life, and a lot of it is thanks to Dracula.
Even though Dracula launched Lupita's career and was a big hit with audiences, the original negatives had been lost for many years. But in 1992, renewed interest in the film led to a home video release.
Here's David Scull again. He's the Dracula scholar we heard from before.
It was very gratifying to see how well the film was received. Lupita did not expect that late in life that she would be getting all this kind of public attention.
In the 1990s, at the Dallas Film Festival during a revival screening, her grandson Chris saw her most iconic role for the very first time.
I was amazed. I mean, I think her vivacity was what really struck me. It was just very exciting to see her as a young person. I mean, she always sort of maintained that energy and interest in life, and she was always very sparkly, but you could see where it had come from.
Dracula turned Lupita Tovar into a star. For Paul Koner, it gave him a chance to court the woman that he was completely crazy for. And for the movie business, Dracula provided a model of how they could make films for Latin American audiences by shooting Spanish versions simultaneously with the English ones. But that model ended up being pretty short-lived, eventually dubbing and subtitling one over.
But who knows? After all, Latin America is still a huge market for movies. And in the United States, Latinos buy more movie tickets than any other ethnic group. Maybe the Dracula model could come back from the dead one day.
We We first reported this story in March of 2017. And to see some of the clips of the Spanish language version of Drácula, stop by our website, latinousa.org. Our story was reported by Vanessa Erazo and Yara Simón and edited by Marlon Bishop and Nadia Raymond. The Latino USA team includes Fernanda Chavarri, Andres Caballero, Antonia Cerejido, Maggie Freeling, Janice Yamoka, and Sayer Quevedo. Our engineers are Jeannie Montalvo and Stephanie LeBeau. Production assistance this week from Ashley Cleek. Our fellows are Maya Cueva and Jesse Alejandro Cottrell. Our intern is Reese Williams. Our production manager is Natalia Fidelholz. If you like the music you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. Our theme music was composed by Xenia Rubinos. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next time, and in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media, and we'll see you later. Ciao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, and the Heising Simons Foundation, unlocking knowledge, opportunity, and possibilities. More at heisingsimons.org.
Dracula!
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, the decisions that come with parenting a bilingual child.
At the end of the day, it's just, you're just trying to convey an idea. That's what language is for, right? I mean, why would you purposely make it harder for yourself? There has to be another incentive.
That's next time on Latino USA.
What does it take to start something from nothing? And what does it take to actually build it? I'm Guy Raz. Every week on How I Built This, I speak with founders behind some of the most inspiring companies in the world. Find it on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.